So when this airs, it'll be September 1st. So happy September, everybody. We made it. The September. The burrs. September, October, November, December. Well, as I'm perched here up on the edge of the valley, looking down into the lake of Laguna de Balsac here, the nudist colony, I can't help but think of all the poor turtles on the banks of this mighty lake here that are at the moment, as we speak, with the consideration that Labor Day will be 111 degrees out here, that they're not considering the benefits of actually turning themselves into turtle soup, right? Like some mass cultish suicide attempt by the turtle population here, where they all in unison just shave their heads after committing to reading the Book of Poems by Gary Snyder, the poet laureate and Pulitzer Prize winning poet from former UC Davis instructor and Jack Kerouac confidant. His book Turtle Island, they just committed it to memory and then just decided in some kind of mass extinction, just decided to succumb to the heat of the situation. Like what the fuck's going on with our planet here? Like, I'm just fucking, this is insane. Like, it used to be like I would marvel at, you know, this certain times of year, you would have these heat waves that are just astounding, you know. But it was never like as in your face as it is now. Like, if we're gonna be 111 on Labor Day, my God. So what is Needles, California going to be? What is Death Valley? Death Valley has had the highest recorded temperature on Earth in 1910, I believe, at 134. We're going to be like, we're just like a summer away. We're like a couple of years away from like just going, wow, gosh, I'm glad it's only 111. Fuck, what the fuck, dude? But then life's got to carry on, right? I mean, we still got to, like, exist. I'm out here at Laguna de Tatas, and I'm getting my walking in. I'm looking kind of at the aftermath of the whole naked man experience, right? So here we are three weeks after the fact, after thousands of weirdos, naked weirdos, just kind of came out and just did a social vomit of social vomiting display of celebration, a celebratory vomit, if you will. And then, you know, just systems failing all around them, toilets, people ODing, people drunk, people wearing fucked up hats, people wearing sunglasses that are, you know, three notches above their fashion capacity, just getting out of their comfort zone, which is the way it should be. But now everyone's back to normal. It's quiet, it's sedate. I'm in here getting my steps in, dog, on a sunny Wednesday morning prior to this godforsaken awful, like, fucking Mississippi ran out of water, or Jackson, Mississippi, anyway. Like, what the fuck? Colorado River's drying up. There's no more Lake Mead. I mean, This is unexpected. Doesn't bode well, but what we're gonna do is we're gonna go into autumn, or as they say, in other parts of the country, fall. We're gonna go in with this. All of a sudden, all the memes are gonna be all the Ashleys and the Kayleys with their pumpkin spice lattes and their fucking thigh-high suede boots and shit, all looking the same, with the same blonde hair and the highlights and all that shit. And every other meme's gonna be about pumpkin spice lattes. We're gonna forget this whole thing ever happened, right? Until next year, when we're gonna grow accustomed to 120. We're gonna be like, oh, it's only 119 today. Oh, nice, man. Feel a little breeze. Better get my parka. What the fuck, man? But as I'm walking around here, I'm just like looking at life getting back to normal. Like people just, you know, naked as the day I was born. Walking by, people just servicing their electrical panels in their houses. Like, don't mind me, I'm naked. They don't give a fuck though. And but what's really going on? I'm gonna tell you. So my grand scheme, of course, is as I live the life of, say, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm living a life comparable to, say, like Elon Musk, who's just like living on at friends' couches and shit like that, right? Just crashing at friends' houses, right? Like, just kind of liquidated all of his assets, or his houses rather, for the reason being they're too much of an attack vector. I don't know what that means, an attack vector. Does that mean a physical attack vector, or is that just a social media attack on him? Like, oh, you got all these houses. Okay, well, now I don't, bitch. I squirrel that money away to take us to Mars, because this planet's dying. It's too hot. It's like, well, shit, I just told you what's going on. It's too hot. So this guy sold all his houses, and he's just crashing at friends' houses as he's getting up for work in West Texas to go to SpaceX to go launch rockets into outer space, right? You know, there's a theory. There's beyond like the flat earthers. There's like a theory that we live in, and these guys are. I mean, I don't know where this came from. These people think that we live in some kind of biodome, and that space is like a construct. Like, it's all manipulated. We still got too much time on our hands, people. So, long story short, I gotta watch my youngest. She elected to stay back, not go to Norway, because I guess she wants to, I don't know, as opposed to her twin brother, wants to succeed in school, which, hey, pick your poison, right? So Sunday night, I get down there, and I was done with my obligations at like 4:30, I got down there. No, I got down a little earlier. Got down there about 5. And my ex-mother-in-law was watching her up to that point, and she was so kind. She made me a CD with 60s French pop. Like, what the fuck? Like, word's getting out that I'm learning this French, you know? So she made me this CD of Françoise Hardy. It's Françoise Hardy. You know? I'm like, wow, okay, right on. So I've been blasting some French pop. I've been listening to, you know, like I said in the last podcast, I was phasing out a little bit of the Police, but, you know, it just, like, the more I listen, like, I created this kind of comfort zone for myself, like a neural pathway that just kind of, you can rely on to, like, set your mind at ease, because it's something you're familiar with, right? The familiarity of watching the same movie over and over again. But, so I'm listening to the Police, right, on Spotify, and it's like, do you ever notice that Sting is just bellowing? He's always bellowing, like, yo, 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 you know, like, he's always bellowing. Like at the beginning of Synchronicity 2. Ba-na-na-na, another suburban family morning. But he's like, yo. And then he's like, and then Regatta de Blanc, the song itself is just, that's, it's just him bellowing like, yo, yeah, yeah, yo, yeah, yeah, yo, yeah, yo, yeah, 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 yeah. And I don't know, and you know, every little thing she does is magic. Eo, eo. Like he's always going eo, eo, eo. But anyway, I just thought that was fascinating. Why is he always bellowing? Like, but it's kind of primal. It's kind of weird, primal. You know, maybe that's why I'm out here walking around, no clothes on, right? It's just kind of this primal urge, kind of weird, getting back to my primal DNA. You know, but I think that's one of my favorite songs. Though, is Synchronicity 2. It's talking about another suburban family morning. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Grandmother shouting at the wall. Packed like lemmings into shiny metal boxes. You know, it's just kind of, he's just ruminating on the din of suburban life, and you know, and how daddy's got to go to work and just get emasculated by his boss, you know. In every single meeting with this so-called superior is a giant kick in the crotch. I mean, that's just suburban. That's the beat down of life, you know, that there was from, I don't know, from the Eisenhower era, from the 50s. Like, I was kind of explaining this to my ex-mother-in-law before she left. I said, isn't it weird that we're kind of reverting to the 50s now? We're like back in the Eisenhower era where everyone's got, you know, there's this need for this sought after need for like these shiny new appliances, and you know, you're shouting above the din of your Rice Krispies and nobody can hear anything, and you got to go to work and get dressed down by your boss, who, they're all just cogs in the wheel, right? And it's sad. And now we almost made our way out of that in the 60s with these festivals like Woodstock, and you know, the original Woodstock, not the malevolent 99 Woodstock or these other horrible these ridiculous kind of you know, violent outbursts. But that in itself is a symptom of the times, right? 99 Woodstock. I mean, 90, that was like Y2K, people just learning about the internet, people gearing up for social media, fucking hysteria, paranoia, anxiety, grief, malevolence, you know. And that was like the symptom, that was kind of like Woodstock 99 was probably like the launching of all that crazy ass hysteria, right? So, but anyway, so I'm crashing out, you know, I had to crash at the X's, right? So, which is, I mean, it is what it is. Like I say, I've kind of taken on this aspect where I'm just kind of like living on the fly. I'm living on the fly. Here I am. Here I am out here in this strange little plot of land, just getting in my hike, you know? And then I'll move on to my daily obligations as far as, you know, getting the blood to the people, getting the organs to the people in Denver, shipping off fucking, you know, stem cells to wherever they gotta go, picking up fucking platelets from Placerville platelets, you know, the double P, and spreading the joy and love, right? And then I drive back down about 80 miles back to Modesto to hang out with my youngest. She's great. She's cool. She looked like The other morning, she was dressed like Jean Seberg from the French New Wave film Breathless by Jean-Luc Godard. Or as they say in France, à bout de souffle. But she's got kind of like that Jean Seberg short hair thing going on. Looking all hip with her pointy sunglasses. Just kind of dictating the vibe. She can do that. What the fuck? I don't care. But that seems to be the groove that I settled into now. So Monday morning she leaves the house at 8 a.m. So I leave the house at 8 a.m. I don't really want to hang out any unnecessarily. What's the point, right? I've got shit to do. You know, it gets to the point where you just need a place to crash, right? You just need a place to crash. Like Elon Musk, he just needs a place to crash in West Texas, you know, on his buddy's couch. And then he's going to go, you know, colonize Mars. Like, no big deal, right? So I leave at 8. It puts me back up. I close in on Laguna del Sol, right? I was trying to think of something clever that would envision like cantaloupes or grapefruits hanging in a nylon, you know, the vision of droopy ball sacks out here is what you get. But so by the time I get up here, it's close to 9. So I'm in position for the early routes if they call upon me, which they did on Monday. I was literally a minute and a half away from pulling into the gates here, into the sanctuary. There's a bunch of sanctuary weirdos and suicidal turtles. And I get a call up, 9:18. They called the 9 a.m. route in at 9:18. I'm like, what the fuck? Right on time, as usual. So I managed to get that taken care of, but still be done and still take care of all my other obligations later on in the afternoon and make my way out of Dodge by about, oh, I don't know, 3:30. So then I'm tooling back down the 99 through the Great Central Valley here. Provides a quarter of the world's food through monoculture farming, you know, spreading glyphosates through 90% of our corn, you know, so we can get our healthy dose of Roundup, you know. Thank you, Monsanto, as well as other things like soybeans and shit. So as I'm tooling through the Central Valley, it's probably like 4 o'clock, I don't know. I get a call, and it's my buddy Lenny. And I'm like, what the fuck? I hadn't talked to this guy in like, oh God, when was that? 2018? Yeah, I think 2018. And he's one of my closest friends, though, because I'm not good. I'm not a good friend. Like, I feel like I typically feel like I'm intruding someone's life if I just reach out and call them. So they end up calling me, which is fine. And then he calls me up, and I'm like, what the hell, dude? It's been like 3 or 4 years. Yeah, it's been like at least 3 years, almost 4, since I've been down and seen him. And he's a character. But I think I even mentioned him in my last podcast. He's kind of like that guy. He's an ex-Chicago gangster. He's literally an ex-Chicago gangster. He's in a gang. He was in a gang. Well, he's still kind of like, once you're in, you know, it's like the cartel, right? It's kind of like, he's like, yeah, it's very similar to like the Chicago cartel, right? Like, he's always got a gun with him. He's always packing. And he's a so he's been laid up with COVID. He's a finance guy for GMC. Chevy GMC out in the Bay Area, and just makes stupid money. And he called me. He's like, I've been laid up with COVID. I go, oh no, I go, hey, man. I go, do you get vaxxed or what? He's like, no, man, I'm a fucking Republican. I'm like, okay. It's all good, brother. But that's who he is, you know. He's a good dude. He's literally like a gangster. He seeks out confrontation. He can be confrontational. I think we may have gotten into it maybe one time and it was really subdued, but I've seen him shout, scream in the face of dealership customers. Right in front of me, right in front of our desk manager, like the sales manager, when he was on the line with me, when we were both salesmen, screaming at this guy, I will fuck you up in front of your son. Like, oh shit. Cause like, you know, you get, we had the typical, like, you know, you get those customers that come in and they give you the Heisman, right? They fucking just give you the old stop sign with their hand. Like, hey, I don't need help. I don't need to talk to anybody. And like, and you gotta fucking break that. You gotta break that bitch. You gotta bust him in the nose, you know? Get that, bring that guard down. And this guy just wasn't having it. And he finally kind of did a suburban, you know, domesticated house husband kind of flash on him, on my buddy Lenny. He's like, man, I don't need your help. And he's like, I'll fuck. He goes, get the fuck out of here. He's like, get the fuck out of here. I'll fuck you up in front of your, like, he was really, he started it. So when they say buyers are liars, they are. I mean, the general unwashed public is a group of just degenerates. And this guy was no different, but he just was disguised in a golf shirt with his dopey son. And he was about to get beat down by a Chicago gangster. So that is my buddy Lenny. And his brothers are gangsters. His brother, he was telling me, was he just got out of, he did a year and a half. I didn't ask him for what. But classic guy, classic dude. His other brother lives up in Roseville near us. But and I work with his brother who was in, you know, in jail. I work with him too. They're all, and you know what's interesting is that they all have this weird. It's the Kramer Kevorka. Like, if you ever seen the Seinfeld episode where Kramer, there's a nun. Was she a cat? Yeah, I think she was a Catholic. Yeah, she must have been a nun or a monk. Yeah, but some kind of religious woman that was renouncing her. She must have been a nun. She was renouncing her her commitment to being a nun because she fell in love with Kramer. Because he's like, I got the Kevorka. It's like some kind of spell, you know? Women just kind of, lesbians become heterosexual. You know, nuns, you know, disown their oath. You know, renounce their oath to God because Kramer's got the Kevorka, right? And, well, that's what my buddy Lenny has, and his brothers. Like, and these, and they're not, I mean, they'll tell you they're handsome. I wouldn't agree, but they're lean dudes. I don't know how they do it too, man. They are lean, like super lean. You know, average height, 5'10". But nothing to write home about, but both these, him and Ray, Lenny and Ray, used to pull these pieces, the dime pieces, just like, what the fuck, how, like, how? But it's an attitude, it's a Kevorka, it's just what's up, right? And it's classic. But but Ray took a divergent path, and he used to sell cars. He wasn't particular, he was okay, he was good, he had his moments. He was better in the Bay Area when he worked down in the Bay Area, but not as much in the Central Valley. I don't know. There's a real, they keep a real cool perspective on things. They keep things at, like, arm's reach, you know. They're not very demonstrable people, right? They're that, it's kind of like that cliched kind of mobster mentality, kind of cool on the down low, don't say too much. Prototypical kind of, you know, looking like you're half distracted or that you don't really even care. But when it's go time, man, I've seen him get, oh my God, I've seen him flash at managers, fucking people. For whatever reason, he and I just hit it off. Like, my first month in the business, my first full month, I did 12 and a half cars. The big bonus was at 12 cars, but I was sitting at the last day of the month. It was May, so it was like Labor Day weekend. And what had happened was and when I started at the store at Nissan, my first full month, my first gig as a salesman at Nissan, we had some killers. We had some killers on the sales floor. I mean, these guys all became desk managers, finance guys, heavy hitters, right? And then on the last weekend of the month, I'd say last Sunday of the month, this guy gets out of a car, gets dropped off, and all of a sudden he's just like, I'm here, let's go. Like, he just kind of like, he summoned himself to onto the sales floor. Like, it's as if he wasn't even hired. He just kind of showed up and started selling cars, right? And so what happened was, so he had worked there previously. He'd worked there for, I want to say, a year or so. And then he had this habit of taking off to Chicago for 3-4 months at a time and then coming back, getting his old job back. Fascinating, right? Always an open door, because he's a gangster, because he's a good dude. People recognize him as a good dude. He will fuck you up, but he's a good dude, right? And so he shows up, finally gets back from Chicago. Doesn't even have a car. He gets dropped off at the dealership, picks up an up. I got an up. I'm working a deal, and they're like, hey, this is Lenny's customer. So I'm working a deal. So now, whoever he picked, so however that worked, I don't know how that worked, but so I'm sitting at like 11 cars, right? And I got this guy I'm working who had, must have requested, he probably just asked for Lenny. You know, that happens. If they ask for, if they mention you by name, you are morally obligated to put that guy on the deal, right? And you have to be your own, you know, barometer of morality at that point, you know, because if they didn't hear it, you can, I mean, I know guys that fucking, they'll tell you, yeah, they talked a lot about you, but they didn't mention your name, and they fucking get screwed out of a deal. Not, you don't want to do this to Lenny, because he'll put a bullet in your knee, right? So anyway, I got this guy who's asked for Lenny. I don't know, maybe if you'd known him previously, he sold him a car last year or whatever. So now, what that means is I'm working a half deal, right? That I'm on the front of, okay? Or no, I'm on the closing end. Lenny's on the front automatically if they ask for him, and he's not there. So when he pulls up, when he gets dropped off, he picks up an up, okay? Just a fresh up. Some Indian dudes, right? Everybody hates Indian customers, but not me, because you can say whatever you want to Indian customers. They just laugh it off. They're like, you know, you can fucking clown on them, you know? They'll clown right back. They don't get, you know, not all of them. They're fairly quiet, but they're grinders. They're grinders. They will fuck your deal up, man. They'll be asking you some crazy shit, like $2,000 under invoice. You're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, that's not, like, give me like a real offer, right? $2,000 under invoice. Go fuck yourself, right? But you can tell them that, and they don't get pissed, right? But you know it's a deal because they're all bricks. They're all strong credit, you know? Like, they're all 800s, right? Like, it's a guaranteed deal, but you're going to get pulled through the knot hole by your dick, right? And so he picks up a fresh up, and they're Indians, and I'm working his deal. So now we're married. So he's working I got half of his deal because I got his deal, right? If that makes sense. So we're both working half deals, but all together, if they both close, it's a full deal for each of us, right? Although we split them. I'm sure that makes sense to you now. And I'm like, who's this motherfucker? I'm like, who's this guy? And he's already, my deal's done. My deal's, I sold my car. I got half. I'm on the closing half. He's on the front of the half. Now Lenny's working his deal. It's like the last deal of the night. And the management knows, like, I'm a half deal away from hitting that big, the big bonus, you know? So they got to keep this deal together. And they want to sell the car anyway. If you walk on the lot, they're not going to let you leave. That's a fact. So he's in Lenny's, he's a short fuse, man. So he fucking hates Indians. He just goes right to the Costco pricing, which is his flat invoice or whatever. They're like, they're not having it. So he's like, I'm going to blow these guys out. Boss, I'm gonna blow these motherfuckers out. I'm fucking tired of these fucking bitches. Like, and I just see him like talking to our desk manager Neil Dow, who, you know, deal now with Neil Dow. They're pointing over me like, hey, this guy, you're married to this guy over here. And he's looking at me like, who the fuck is this guy? And he's like, we got to make this deal happen. So they dig deep, and they make the deal. It's a stinker. They lose some money, but you know they're gonna get it all back with the factory bonuses for hitting certain tier level of sales and so forth. But that was my initial introduction to my boy Lenny. Full on gangster. So and. This guy's he's a classic. Like there's so many instances where I could talk about. Like there's this guy I used to work with, his name Billy Schindel, who's now in prison for killing his girlfriend. But I remember one time sitting in the break room, Lenny bought this burrito. Fucking guy could put food away too. And still, he couldn't have ever weighed more than 145 pounds, right? And, like, just the name Lenny, just you think Lenny. Like, Lenny is like that guy at the pool hall. Like, you just kind of don't trust, but you like, but you don't trust, right? But that's Lenny. So, he's sitting in the break room. He takes one bite of his burrito. Billy Schindel, the biggest cheapskate in the world. Billy Schindel would grift his mom if he could. And he did. He probably did, actually. So he's always looking for like a cheap, you know, loophole, a comeuppance, a freebie, you know, hey, hook me up with lunch today, take care of me, you know, I'll get you later, or, you know, just some put together. But he's doing it he was a talker, man. Like he could, one of the funniest motherfuckers I've ever, I mean, he's one of the top three talkers I've ever seen in my whole life. He's a crack up, man, but notoriously cheap. So Lenny's sitting there, he's got this mammoth burrito, man. Sitting in the break room, he takes one bite, he's like, this burrito fucking sucks, just chucks it right in the garbage. A full fucking one bite taken up. Billy looks over, he's like, what the, He just fucking about had to have a heart attack seeing that whole thing just getting chucked. Because that was an opportunity for Billy. Lenny doesn't give a fuck. But now, anyway, this guy, he prints money now. Like, he just fucking, he's got, you know, a few cars, a couple of Beamers. I mean, nothing. Like, he showed up in Modesto. Why was he in Modesto? When he came from Chicago, like for one thing, probably just to avoid the gang. I mean, he had to get out of the gang life for one, but also his mom lives in Modesto, and he's one of those guys. He just takes care of his mom, you know. He's a gangster with the heart of gold. That's what he is, taking care of his mom. So he works over, you know. He's a salesman. Lenny's a salesman. Great finance guy. Just rips your face off in finance. Rips your face off. And but he's like one of my closest friends, but I hadn't talked to him in a few years. So he calls me up. He's like, hey, yo, you doing, bro? What are you doing, bro? I'm like, oddly enough, I'm driving down to Modesto. Like, he knew I lived up north here. He said, oddly enough, I'm on my way down to Modesto. I got to watch my youngest, you know, because her brother and sister in Norway. Her brother's getting tatted up in Norway like some kind of fucking Viking. And he's like, oh, no way. He goes, let's go get a drink later on. I'm like, okay, all right, sure. So I get that. So I'll be down there at like 5 o'clock. Like, okay, well, I'm usually in Modesto Mondays from like 7:30. Meet me over at the old Uno's, which is like they redid the Uno's over there. It's some other grill now. The bar, shit like that. So I get back, call my lady. I say, I go, call my lady. Tell her to, because she was coming down. So it's Monday night. It's Monday night. My youngest just got home from school. She's doing her homework and blah, blah, blah. Storm into the house. Like, hey, girl. What you up to? I got my buddy. I'm going to go get a drink with my buddy Lenny. She's like, okay, cool. Or I said, or you can come by here. She's like, no. Okay, well, and then I said Christina's coming down too. She's like, okay, all right, no worries. So it's her and I. And I head over, like, my lady's at, she's coming from Oroville of all places, the meth capital. She's up there delivering shit, medical supplies up there, and then has to drive about, oh God, that's about 2.5 hour drive. So I got time to kill. I'm like, fuck it, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to go head over there. Go sit down with my buddy, have a drink. And then my lady will show up. And she wanted to stop in anyway and get cleaned up before she met us over there. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to go over there. I'm not going to wait. Because Lenny texts me, I'm already here, bro. It's like 6:30. I'm like, okay, all right. All right, give me 15 minutes. I'll be over there. So I head over there. And it's just like it used to be, man. You know, like back in the day. Like, he hasn't changed one iota. Like, he's still ripping fools' faces off in finance, just handing them their lunch. But it's still got that old car vibe, you know, that car guy vibe, you know? Like, the bar is kind of lit. There's like sales managers and salespeople. And he brought a buddy of his. That's another thing with Lenny, is he's always with somebody. He's always got to be kind of adorned, right? Which is what, whatever. You know, people want to be with people. So he brought over a buddy from BMW. His buddy Anthony. And so we sat there, just had a drink, bullshitted, and I was just cracking up. Till my lady got there, I was cracking up till she showed up. I was cracking up because I was thinking he bought a house about the last time I talked to him, about 3 years ago. He had a housewarming party, right? So all these people show up, all these car guys show up, right? Bunch of dirt bags, you know. Just whenever you get more than like 5 or 6 car guys in a room, it never ends well, right? There's something happens, something goes down, some fucking too much alcohol, too much substances that are just kind of just randomly, you know, strewn about. But this is also at the same time, like, that his brother was in the joint, right? According to him. And we could, my lady and I were going to catch dinner before we went down to Manteca, because it's about an hour drive. And then we were going to catch dinner and then go down and go to the housewarming party and so forth. And it just so happened that I just had, I don't know, I probably had one too many glasses of wine. I didn't want to drive that late. And so we just backed out at the last minute. But so later on, like, I don't know, must have been the next day or something. He texts me, he's like, yeah, bro, it's a good thing you didn't show up, man. I fucking got my pistol out. I had to get everybody to leave. The place fucking is pissing me off. These guys just show up and start getting loud. You know, there's no respect, you know. They're fucking taking bottles. Guys showing up with bottles and guys taking, leaving with bottles and shit. Like, I just fucking got my pistol out. I was like, get the fuck out of my house. I'm like, fucking what? Like, dude, I wish I'd have gone. I wish I would have seen that. Just this guy brandishing a pistol in his kitchen, just telling everybody to get the fuck out, right? Because he was kind of, there's a lot going on at the time. Again, like his brother was in the joint, and so he had to kind of keep an eye on things, take care of his nephew, because his brother's got a little boy. And at the time, he had a little boy, real young, so he was, Lenny's that guy. He's just going to take care of his family, even though he's fucking screaming at him, telling him what a bunch of fucking, you're going the wrong way, bro. You're making stupid decisions, bro. You know, he'll chew you out, but he's got you covered, right? So he's waving a pistol all over his kitchen, man. Like, fuck, I wish I'd have gone there. I wish I'd have seen that. But that's my buddy Lenny. So that lifestyle, though, for me, I have to look at it from, like I say, an arm's length. Like, back in the day, 10 years, 12 years ago, I mean, that was a Wednesday night, right, in the car business, and, but it's just different now. That was one of the things we kind of ruminated on, was now the car business is different. It's homogenized. Everybody wears the same polo shirt with the stenciled logo of their dealership on it. Everybody looks the same. Everybody looks like CarMax. Everybody looks like the same cog on the wheel, the block, the building block. Everybody looks like a Lego. Everybody looks like a Lego, and the process is the same. So it doesn't matter who you talk to. You don't want a divergence of character. You don't want somebody with more character than the other, or a better talker than the other. They all have to be saying the same exact thing. They all have to be saying the same lines, the same introduction. Hey, what can I get you information on? Hey, what can I show you? Welcome. Are you replacing your vehicle? Can I offer you a free Kelley Blue Book appraisal? All this bullshit, right? No character. There's no depth, And so, yeah, we just kind of reminisce about the old days, but... it's just dried up. All the character in the business is dried up. We're going into a characterless society, and it's overtaken by all this social media bullshit, the polarization of movements, people, liberals, conservatives, the Me Too movement, the this, the that, the controversies, the fucking, the Trumpsters, the woke, the fucking, you name it. It's just it's just sucking the character, the vitality out of our lives. And there's nothing left, when you used to just be, you used to just fucking just smoke weed all day at the dealership, knock out a couple of car deals, then you go at 9 o'clock, you leave for San Francisco and you go look for trouble out there. Like, people don't do that anymore. So we're just kind of reminiscing about that. And then, and my lady showed up, and she, because she loves Lenny. He used to come by the house when we were living in Modesto all the time, just to have a beer, kick it, talk shit, yell at me, and then bounce. And then, so she showed up. We had a little bit of eggplant, some lamb, a little bit of lamb, some eggplant, and a beer, and that was that. And in true Lenny fashion, he's like, okay, bro, I gotta go. Like, nothing sentimental, just out. He's just out. Like, you give him an embrace, you give him a high five, not a high five, but you give him, salutary hug, he's out. And so my lady and I now saunter back to this fucking my ex's house. Like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, but that's cool. We're just kicking on the couch, when we got there, I was like, we'll just turn on some whatever is on, right? Like, streaming. She's got all the streaming thing. I don't know. She's got the HBO Max and all that. So I'm like, oh, okay. So let me see what's... So I found the Anthony Bourdain movie. The biopic. The documentary, Roadrunner. I did not realize. Like, I don't know. It wasn't a very... In my opinion, Not a very sympathetic portrait, but fascinating nonetheless, because it just kind of chronicles like his rise to fame. And this is kind of parallel to kind of what I've been speaking about, is like, things have changed, right? Things change, right? So early on, you know, the story goes like Bourdain, he was a cook. He ran a kitchen, and he wrote an article. He did write an article that he was trying to give away to a free publication, a free magazine in the village or something. Just give it to him. Just here, you print this. It's the inside story of what really goes on in the kitchens of New York, right? Behind the scenes, peek under the rug, right? Peek behind the curtain. Good shit, right? Just a simple, probably 5,000 words. I don't know, if that. And he never got a response from a free publication, right? So he's like, ah, fuck it. You know, went on for months, nothing. Until finally he's like, ah, you know what? I'll just send this to the New Yorker. You know, one of the biggest rags in the country, right? Liberal slant, probably eat this shit up. Well, they bought it. Well, that kind of showcase propelled him to like all these book deals. They just wanted to, now, can you write a book about this? Yeah. Can you write in 8 months? Fuck yeah, I can. And that became Kitchen Confidential. Great fucking book. What a fucking book. Oh my God, the behind the scenes shit. It's like listening to the inside story of car dealerships. It's just all these insider tips about what to do, what not to do, what to have, what not to have. Do not have the specials. Never take the specials. Because that's just shit that's been sitting around too long that they gotta move. So, you know, stuff like, but just the lifestyles, these like band of pirates, you know, that work in your kitchens, you know, these undocumented immigrants, these fucking crazy people, these fucking psychos, these, you know, it's just a free-for-all, a barrage, and it's very, very similar to the car business. It's kind of what I was drawn in it right away, because I could identify it. I get it. But anyway, that was his rise to fame. That's where that's where his bread and butter came from. And then he was, you know, offered these TV shows through CNN, Parts Unknown, or No Reservations and so forth, Cook's Tour. And that kind of launched his celebrity, his persona. And that's where he came to be. And then, but what was really interesting, what I didn't understand, was like, he was really early on, he was in his own world. He was kind of very introverted. Not the guy that you know, we've grown accustomed to watching mature and become and evolve and have to be this great narrator with this great command of language and words and how it all boils down to just, you know, even though we have differences, whether you're coming from this background or that background or this ideology, this perspective, like at least you can sit down and have a meal and you know, politely disagree or agree to disagree, but over a meal, you're able to kind of see each other's perspective on things, whether you embrace it or not, right? And but eventually he grew into that role, and he became what he became. And then I think it just got too much for him. And then, I mean, it's not a spoiler alert, because we all know ultimately what happened. But just a tragedy. But the ultimate tragedy was like near the end. I get so the bent of the film is like, I didn't realize he was married when he was broke, before he had even written his book. He was married for like a long time. For like a dozen years or so, right? And then that marriage dissolved when he started kind of traveling. And then he met his second wife, Otavio, who was a Portuguese or a Brazilian jiu-jitsu that was her main thing, is that she was a competitive jiu-jitsu artist of sorts, martial artist. And that's, and then that, you know, he, but, and then had a child, had a daughter with her. And, but his obsessive kind of OCD, well, his kind of, yeah, very upset, kind of an obsessive nature, like, you know, that razor sharp focus, that tunnel vision that you kind of have to have if you, you know, are in a occupational world like he is. He started training jiu-jitsu and became obsessed with that and started, you know, incorporating that into his life, and it was a healthier diversion. He was trying to quit smoking, not drink as much, but then he met this Italian, this crazy Italian chick, Asia Argento, who they kind of pinned the whole kind of destructive nature and ultimate demise on her, it looks like, because it dissolved his marriage. He kind of like was led around by her. He started becoming kind of a diva. He started letting her direct episodes of Parts Unknown. He fired close friends. He just became a real kind of like a diva. And his, you know, his face got kind of, you could just see it in his face. It was like, it's kind of his forlorn looks, kind of it was just kind of bloated with drink and kind of rubbery and just kind of distracted and beaten down a little, but just run. The indication in the film was that he was just being run by this woman, this crazy Italian, who then was exposed in the tabloids for being with another guy. Well, she was dating him, and that was it, and that was the end. And then he said, "Fuck this, I'm out." There's a lot of stuff going on, from what I understand. He was paying some hush money to people to cover up some nasty stuff because she was involved in the Me Too movement, but it was kind of a little hypocritical because of some other. It's a whole convoluted thing that he really shouldn't have been involved in, and just a tragic end to it. People were really drawn to this guy, you know? Really drawn to this guy, despite his kind of manicness and his weird nature and his idiosyncrasies and all that, because we all have that, but some of them have, they're more endearing than others, and there's something just, I don't know, people really love this guy. They love this guy, right? Like, but in the end, it was part of the culmination of all that, too, is like this overbearing obligation to celebrity. Everybody wanted to stop and talk to him on the street. He's like me. He and I would have been very comfortable just sitting at home smoking weed all day, you know, but we're compelled to get out and, you know, not do that, right? Whatever we can do to distract ourselves from being that guy, right? And that goes for probably more than just us. I mean, there's a lot of people that I guarantee you much rather be sitting at home just fucking isolated from the shitstorm that's brewing out there, this whole mess of what's going on, you know, fucking rivers drying up out here, politicians just yelling at each other, just totally lost the plot, you know, just overwhelmed with their own self-interests, and there's absolutely no drinking water in Jackson, Mississippi. There hasn't been any drinking water in Flint, Michigan for like the last decade. I mean, what the fuck is going on? We're sending, you know, tens of billions of dollars of aid to the Ukraine, yet there's no drinking water in Jackson, Mississippi. What the fuck are we doing? You know? And then so you combine all that with the chaos of your life or your background or your people in your circle, and he just was like, I'm out. This is where I get off. And it was really tragic. I remember when Ness woke me up to say that he was dead. I'm like, what? It was June of 2018. Yeah. Like, fuck. Really? So, I just hate shit like that. I hate news like that. I hate untimely stuff, you know? But that was that. That was it. We watched that and called it a night. Back up the next morning, made some instant coffee, My lady and I were out the door at 8 a.m. Life carried on, you know, because that's what it does. That's what you got to do, you know, despite whatever's going on. You still got to jam your fucking foot into your shoes. And you got to put one foot in front of the other and get out the door, right? Make something of the day. So that's where we stand. But yeah, it's been a weird, been busy. Driving back and forth up and down the valley. And driving all day through the foothills and driving back home. My lady just stayed with me the one night, but last couple nights I'm not even done till about 7:30 anyway, so it puts me down in Modesto about 9. Hang with my youngest. She went over her presentation of the damn sentimental comedy. Oh my god. She described it to me in the most, how did I characterize this with, told my lady. I go, she goes, good, because obviously she stayed behind. She goes, good night. She texts me, good night. I'm going to turn off my ringer, go to bed. I said, good night, sugar. I just got to hear Audrey's presentation. It's so cringeworthy, funny, intentionally cringeworthy is what it is. And maybe that's what, sometimes things are. Things are intentionally cringeworthy. I don't know. But so be it. She's giving the presentation as we speak. And I will leave off with that nugget of, with that non sequitur. And I will talk at you later. And arrivederci, babies.